Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Nice.
All right, very nicely done.
And a good
very idea. Nicely done.
Rude hog or die.
Something to consider.
Yeah.
You don't have to decide on anything. This show today is for you. We are going to bring in all this information. Ultimately, you and Ike will have a conversation about where it all goes. But for right now, the people are here to help. Matt, Rohnert Park, what are you thinking?
Yeah, man, I'm thinking the same thing as the last caller. Definitely got to go double meat, double roast beef, maybe a spicy double roast beef for my boy Lo, because he packs the beef and he gets crazy.
Interesting. Interesting.
That's back to back Sonoma County calls too for your Bay Star rankings.
Yeah. There you go.
Also, people can just so you know, you can go to Twitter and Facebook, our 95.7 pages, and put your suggestions on there as well.
Bobby on the 280. Bobby, what are you thinking?
What's up, guys? Thanks for taking my call. So I think you got to call it the I Digest.
Nice.
Got to have loast beef, provolone, tomato low. Lotus and Malo on Soured Low.
Not bad. These aren't just sandwich and name suggestions. These are some really in-depth ideas right here. Levi, Oakland, what are you thinking?
Yeah, I'm thinking, thanks for taking my call, guys. I'm thinking we should call it the Fres Low. Because he likes Fresno, and that's low meal. He represents Fresno. So we would go with a marble rye bread, and we would put turkey and roast beef on it, double it, with some honey mustard, some jalapenos, peppercinos, pepper jack, lettuce and tomatoes.
Boom. Damn. Everybody's very looking good to make this thing spicy.
Yeah.
Spicy hot takes in favor of the show.
And you have to finish your sandwich with an uptake, and that's very well done by Levi right there, upticking it all.
Robert in Pacifica. Robert, what are you thinking?
Well, three names, actually. I got three of them that might work. The first one could be the Pavarotti, you know, because the man can sing. He's got some pipes there.
It's true.
The other one I'm thinking of is maybe the Heisman Maker. He's a man. I mean, I'm sorry. The Hall of Fame Maker. The Hall of Fame Maker, because he's the one that puts him in the Hall of Fame. Or you could just go with the Alligator Arms.
Wow.
Well, that's an uptick there as well.
He killed me with the alligator worms. That was nice.
Crocodile chicken nuggets. Wow. Jesse, Pittsburgh. Jesse, what's going on? What are you thinking? Jesse.
Yes.
You're on the air, Jesse.
Yeah.
Good morning.
Don't tell me yes. I'm telling you yes. What are you thinking?
Yes.
I am sorry. Yes.
Hang on. No. Look, this is buttoned up, man. We're coming up with a name for a sandwich. We're coming up with a sandwich. We have got to be buttoned up. You got to be organized if you want to be taken seriously. An autographed Fresno State helmet, courtesy of Dan Dibley, is going to be on the line here. Tim Livermore, what are you thinking?
Yes, good morning. I'm thinking the low kneel chicken milk chicken.
Oh, Lord.
Sandwich.
Love it. See, that's it. Very succinct, very subtle, very smart. A lot of people, when I threw this up yesterday on Twitter, were suggesting some sort of sandwich made of soup. They feel that would be the most perfect thing. Take one of Boudin's bread bowls, right, and fill it with soup, but then close the top, and then people have to bite into it, and then soup just leaks everywhere. But wouldn't that be the perfect low kneel sandwich? The mess he makes in here every single day. You probably heard him eating his beef jerky during the last segment. He's got a giant bag of beef jerky, tuna, spilling juices, and lemon all over the place on a regular basis. This is not going to be a clean sandwich.
No.
Take a bread bowl, fill it with soup, top it off, and then force people to bite into it, and then the soup just spills everywhere.
Or maybe you can fill it like those jelly donuts we were talking about during the break, where you would just inject the bread bowl. That way you wouldn't have to cut a hole in the top You would have an actual like loaf of bread, sourdough or sour low, as the caller said, pump it full of chowder, and then there you go.
The Lorenzo O'Meal. All right. You are listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ-FM and HD1, a radio.com station. Good morning and welcome to the program. We will be taking more of your calls throughout the duration on the low sandwich idea, what it should be called, and what it should involve. But we begin this hour with this.
The turn, and here it is. And swung on and tapped up the first baseline, rolling. It's a fair ball, and Luke Roy doesn't tag the runner. Now bobbles it, now throws to first, and throws it down the right field line, and the Astros have won the game. Do you believe that? Tucker has scored on a bizarre play, and the Astros win 6-5 in the 11th. It was a little dribbler, and initially the ball had trickled off foul, but then it rolled. It took a little left turn. It was right on the chalk. And then Luke Roy was trying to tag the runner, Bregman, who was just to the right of home plate, just slightly up the line. And Jonathan trying to tag him, and Bregman eluding that tag. And then Jonathan, the only play he had at that point was to throw the ball to first base and get the out there. And the ball went by Marcana and went down the right field line. That meant that Tucker scored, and the Astros have a 6-5 win.
The value of a brilliant broadcaster like Ken Korak. Watching that highlight and trying to figure out for myself how I was going to explain that today, and then hearing that, you're like, yeah, I'm going to just leave it to Ken. Yeah. Ken's going to be able to break that all down better than I possibly could. So shout out Ken Korak and everything you heard right there. Now, the A's trailing 4-0 in the ninth, came all the way back to tie it. They even grabbed the lead in Houston in the top of the 11th last night as Stephen Piscotty homered for the fourth time in four games. He is now homered in four straight games, but Blake Treinen, one of two A's All-Stars, couldn't hold it down in the 11th. You heard the play that sealed it, and the A's fall 6-5 in Houston. Now, they still won 17 of 22. They're cooking with gas heading into the Bay Bridge series, which starts in a little over 48 hours. More on that in a minute. But for last night, how bizarre of an ending was that, Dibs?
That was crazy. And you feel bad for Blake Treinen. That was a bit of a bad beat because the inning starts with a Josh Reddick check swing on a full count, which could have gone either way. He gets a walk, then he gives up a hit. It's first and third. And so it was kind of an undoing and an unraveling that it wasn't because he was getting lit up. And then, of course, the game-winning hit, the five-foot assassin, as he spins one. It looked more like a shot you'd see in billiards trick shots, you know, where you hit the cue ball on the top and it spins way to the right.
A little bit of English on that ball.
Massive
last night.
Massive English. The spin rate on that thing had to be upwards of 5,000 RPMs. That ball was spinning so much.
What was the launch angle?
I think it was negative 100 degrees. I think it went straight into the ground. Wet newspaper. But you see the catcher pick it up, try to tag. There's dodgeball. Then there's a fumble. Then all of a sudden it's, you know, you're playing pickle and you throw it off the guy's helmet in dodgeball-like fashion. It was like six different childhood games all in one.
How do you shake it off? How do you shake that off for today's game? Because there are two more with the Astros before the A's are going to have the quick turnaround coming back to the Bay Area for the three-game Bay Bridge series, which starts Friday at AT&T Park. More on that in just a moment. But in terms of shaking this one off, is it better to come all the way back and then lose it in extras? Or would you rather have just lost that game 4-0? Honestly, as a competitor, they were down 4-0 in the ninth. They tie it. They take the lead in the 11th, and then they lose. Would you have rather just lost 4-0?
No, because when you come back like that, you feel like you won. You know, when you're just losing, you're lost, you're not in the game, you're down 4-5-0, you think about, okay, God, what we could have done. God, we just couldn't get it going. But to be able to fight through adversity, be down 4-0 and go back to tie it and then go to extra innings and find a way to get a lead, and then you have a, you know, an untimed error, just a simple, you know, the catcher of just touching him, he jumps out of the way and he thinks he's going to hit his skin and he opens up his hand and let the ball fly out of his hand and drops it. So the guy is able to run the first. You saw that happen and you're like, wow. So I think guys rather go through, even though it's heartbreaking, you know, because you felt you felt like a victory just went escaped through your hands. I'd rather have it that way than just be getting motorboated.
Am I wrong for being in a position where I'd rather just lose 4-0? Like, it's just not your night. everyone can chalk that up, and then you can come back the next day. I don't think losing 4-0 leads to any sort of emotional hangover whatsoever. I don't think there's anything other than, hey, that was a dud of a performance. We got to get the bats going tomorrow. Again, you're going against Justin Verlander.
Yes.
It's not the end of the world. You can shake that off. This one, this is the lead story. We've got the MLB Network on right now. It's the lead story there. We're talking about it at the top of every hour today. It's a tough beat. How long is that going to stick with you? Is it wrong to be in a position where you'd rather lose 4-0?
I wouldn't say it's wrong, but I think you're looking at it slightly from the wrong perspective, because you look at what they did and they got to the Astros bullpen, and it's a bullpen that we know is vulnerable to the blow-up.
There is value there.
And so you got to Giles, and you were able to get a Piscotty extra inning home run, and the A's are a team that they hit fastballs very well. So when you go up against a pen like that, down 4-0, to rally, there's value in that, even though you lose in heartbreaking fashion. That play low kind of reminds me of the play where the quarterback gets the snap and he fumbles it and he kicks it, but he's able to pick it up in time to think that he can still make a play, and then it squirts out of his hand and he throws a pick six. It was kind of like two plays in one where, you know, the catcher Lucroy realizes in real time, hey, this is a fair ball. He pounces, he makes a great play, and then he makes the wrong play in trying to tag him, which is like the QB fumble, and then he throws the pick six and the game's over.
Had a little butt fumble to it.
A little bit, right? A little bit.
Yeah, wow.
Happy Thanksgiving, Mark Sanchez.
It's coming right up, Marky.
All right, we've got more to break down with that, as well as this question. Which team heading into the Bay Bridge Series is going to feel more pressure to find success, the Giants or the A's? We'll open them up, 888-957-9570. Right here, Joe Lo and Dibs, 95.7 The Game.
Joe Lo and Dibs continues on 95.7 The Game.
Welcome to the Money Spot. One consecutive hour of commercial-free art for you, the sensual listening audience, because we love you and because we have a plethora of content to get to over the next hour plus. Plethora has been a big word on the show the last 2 weeks. Has anyone noticed that?
Yeah.
Lo's been dropping it left and right.
He's been dropping a lot left and right. He's been dropping knowledge, gems.
Plethora of
stuff.
Turkey on that Lo Neal sandwich people are going to come up with.
Yeah, I like turkey. I do like turkey.
It's creative.
Yeah.
Say that much. Not many turkey sandwiches out there.
Avocado, too. A little avo.
Yeah. Can't find many of those in California.
Yep. Okay. You know, we're going to make it right.
We'll get there.
A little olives.
We'll get there. Olives. Now we're cooking.
Green or black?
Oh, black.
Why did I even ask? I mean, come on, green. Coach.
What's not going to be on the sandwich? That's my question.
That's a pretty good question.
Yeah, there's a lot of things.
How about
no
baked beans?
No baked beans.
Why not?
I don't like sprouts. I'm not going to have that on there.
Legumes?
No legumes.
Tuna fish?
No tuna fish.
Carrots?
No.
What about
no sprouts? Cucumbers.
Pineapple?
I just said no sprouts.
You said no sprouts?
Yeah.
How about sprouts?
I just said no sprouts.
Kale?
Have you considered sprouts?
You know what? Can I get you into some sprouts?
You know what? By the end of the show, he's going to be like, it's going to be a sprout sandwich.
Hell no.
He's just going to be a handful of sprouts and some black water.
Sprouts taste.
And a side of soup, obviously.
I can't deal with sprouts. Definitely can't
deal
with sprouts.
They're like nothing. It's like a little garnish. What do you mean you can't deal with it?
Put a lot of sprouts. They have a different taste, flavor.
You got to get the organic, so it's not so bitter.
Yeah.
It's going to be an expensive sandwich.
Thank you. You understood what I'm talking about. It's
coach,
very bitter.
I'm from Fairfax, Coach. Okay. I know about sprouts.
So no sprouts.
All right. So, bigger question than the sandwich, which it's debatable. But who's going to be facing more pressure heading into this weekend's Bay Bridge Series? Giants fall 2-0 last night to the Cubs. Derek Holland, a completely wasted spot start that was sensational. They couldn't get anything going against Quintana last night. The Astros come back to win it in the 11th. They had led the whole way. They blow a 4-0 lead in the ninth. The A's roar back. Steven Piscotty hits a home run in the fourth consecutive game to give the A's a 5-4 lead in the top of the 11th, but it wasn't meant to be, as Houston goes on to win. A's have still won 17 of their last 22. Who's facing more pressure heading into the break for a good series? If you had to have this series, who's going to come away feeling worse should they lose it, the A's or the Giants?
I think the Giants would come away worse, feeling worse, because they're teetering right now on the brink of going below 500. If they get swept by the A's, pending the outcome of the rest of this series, but they could be below 500 heading into the break, and all of a sudden now the idea of buyers or sellers may switch toward them maybe selling a piece. We talked about Buster Posey's hip, and might he eventually wind up in first base? Would this be an opportunity then to trade Brandon Belt if you saw the season going south? So I think you're in a critical juncture for the Giants. The A's, they're almost playing with house money right now. They've been hot. They're playing great, but they're still six back of Seattle in the race for that second wild card, and they're 10 out in the division. So they don't have that same immediate pressure of being, quote, in the race. They know they have to play another month of good ball to get into a position that the Giants are. Even though the A's have a better record, the Giants are more ensconced in their race.
More pressure heading into the Bay Bridge series, the A's or the Giants? The A's outperforming expectations, the Giants, depending on how you viewed them coming into the season, either managing expectations or perhaps a bit below expectations.
It's the A's. Without a doubt, it's the A's. The Giants, they're barely over 500. All the injuries and all the different things that's surrounding them, I think it's the A's. The A's have a chance to go out and say, you know what? Everyone's been talking about the Giants. If you look at the two organizations, you talk about these two great franchises. Yeah, the A's has some history that's, you know, in the 80s and early 80s when they were, you know, a dominant team. But if you look at the Giants, 1-3-5, all the different things that they've done, and you look at people, how people view them, this organization, you look at the way they view Billy Beanball. Without a doubt, the pressure's on the A's, especially right now since they're 9 games, 10 games over 500, haven't been this way in a couple years, and now they're playing a team that's right there in the thick of things. To go out there and beat the Giants and dominate the Giants, dude, I think the pressure's on them because they are playing better. Everyone said if the A's were on this other division, they'd be in the playoffs. Look where they'd be sitting right now. Dodgers lose last night to the Padres. I mean, the A's, the way that they're playing, they'd be like, would be winning. So the pressure's on them. It's sort of like, Joe, a couple years back when you talked about friggin' Arizona and friggin' Carolina. Who was excited to see that two wild card teams? I mean, you think about how bad they were. You look at them as like,
oh, my God, was that the game when there was backup quarterbacks for both teams?
Absolutely.
That game was straight trash.
Trash. No one wanted to see it. They were lucky to get in the playoffs. Remember the year that you think
about. Do you remember this game?
I'm trying to think. Was it Ryan Lindley? Was he the quarterback in Arizona?
Yeah, that's a good call. That's a good call. Probably Derek Anderson, I would guess, from Carolina. And what was that, January of 2015?
It was a field goal.
Moved up here for
and
that.
They only made field goals. Remember, I don't think a touchdown was scored. I don't know. It was bad. It was a horrible game. Like,
that was
a baseball score.
Sewage. The fact that was a playoff game.
And some teams, if they get in the playoffs, you look at it, it's like, okay, they're just happy to be in. And you look at certain teams, they're streaking at the right time. I remember in 2000 when we got hot, we went to the Super Bowl, Tennessee Titans. Remember how hot Baltimore was at? And we're like, no one wants to see Baltimore right now. That's how the A's right now, if you look at how they're streaking, if the playoffs were to start, teams aren't necessarily just saying, oh, give me the A's. The A's are playing good ball. If they can sustain this the way they're playing, shoot, right now they're giving anybody hell.
They're the hottest team in baseball. And based on the momentum theory that so many subscribe to, now would be the worst possible time to face a team like that if the playoffs were to start today.
No question.
There's a maxim in business, and we all know people who follow this, and we all know people who go 180 degrees against this. Undersell, overdeliver. Undersell, overdeliver. Promise something, not much, and then come in, and when you finally execute, come in 3x, right? Come in three times what you were telling people. For example, on this radio show, you know, we'll try this year to crack the top 10 in radio shows. Can't promise anything, but that's what we're aiming for. Then you come in and boom, take over the world. People look at you and they go, wow, they were only trying to crack the top 10. Then they took over the world. That is an impressive feat. Meanwhile, if you come in and tell everyone, we're going to take over the world, and you finish third, people are going to look at you and go, you came up short. You failed. That's still a great result. But because you promised too much, because you oversold, you set yourself up for disaster. It's a big management no-no, especially when you're dealing with your peers. The A's came into this season very low expectations based on what people have seen over the last few years. Young team, small payroll, a lot of question marks, and yet here they are. 51 wins before the All-Star break. They have won 17 of 22. They look every bit the contender in the American League. They came in with low expectations. They have over-delivered. Conversely, the Giants came in with a top three payroll, came in with massive expectations. Whether or not you bought into the analytics that showed they wouldn't be as great as you thought, you still believe this team was a World Series contender. Now, here they are a couple games over 500. They're in it. But most would say that based on expectations, they're either maybe meeting them or they are falling short. And yet two teams close to each other in record this weekend. That would lead me to believe that unfortunately for them, there is more pressure on the A's. It has gotten to a point now where people are starting to think about the playoffs. This isn't May where you're off to a decent start, but there's so much season left. You're past the halfway mark. You're in the toughest division in baseball. You're going toe-to-toe with some of the best and the baddest in the business.
No question.
And you're doing everything. You're pitching, your bullpen, your defense, you're hitting, you're smashing homers all over the yard. This does look like a team that could make it to the playoffs. The last thing you want going into a week-long break is to come up short against your bitter rival in a year where, for the first time in a while, people are viewing you as the better of the two. The last thing you would want is a week to marinate on the fact that you dropped 2 of 3 or got swept by the Giants. For the Giants to lose 2 of 3 or to get swept by the A's, they'd hear it from the fan base. But regardless, both these messages would be, we're
still
4 out, we're 5 out, no big deal. Based on all the injuries we've sustained, and again, now Joe Panic's out 6 weeks, they're still hanging around with the alligator blood. So that's why I think there's going to be more pressure on the A's this weekend. Overall, I think we're probably looking into it very deeply,
yeah,
and it's unnecessary, but that's what's great about this series reaching this level of prominence. The last few years, this series has meant very little. It's been fun locally, but no one nationally is going to pay attention to it. Now it's going to gain some traction because these are two bona fide playoff contenders.
And you've got the A's staring down 5 games until the break, and you've done so much work to get 10 games above 500 that you would hate to see the A's go 1-4 over these next 5, regardless of how it shakes down. You don't want to win 2 against Houston and get swept, obviously, but anything short of a 2-3 mark would be a disaster. If you look at the Pythagoras run differential for the A's, Joe, they're way better than they should be. They're a plus 21 right now in run differential, yet they're 10 games above 500. So there is a little bit of a sense that they've been stealing from the norm because they have more wins than they probably should. So you can't help but feel a regression is coming at some point. But if you're an A's fan, you don't want to see it happen in San Francisco.
I think both teams could have some regression. You look at the Giants' inability to manufacture runs at times, and they've been winning games. You look at their score differential. So I think that they have, you could say the same for both of these ball clubs. One thing that you'd love to be the side that I want to know, that if I can know that I can score, I have a chance to win. If you can put runs, if you can score runs and make things happen, you are have a better your opportunity to win games. And that's what the A's have been able to do. Manufacture runs, get, you know, and when you can do that with consistency, no matter what, where you steal games or whatever, as long as you know those bats are staying hot and you can put, you know, get runs in, I'll take it. I'll take that.
We're at a point where I think the biggest question that's going to be worth watching moving forward for the A's is what's going to happen with Jed Lowrie here. This is a very delicate situation for the front office and ownership. For the last few years, you've been able to sell off Scott Kazmir, Sonny Gray, Josh Reddick, a host of other players at the deadline because you've been out of it, right? When you're not in contention, it's easy to take on the mode of seller. And the A's have done a marvelous job of this. Find guys where their contracts are expiring, where they're not going to be around next year. You know you're not going to be able to afford them.
Right.
So move them at the deadline to a contender. Try to bring back some prospects. Make it rain in the future. It's a business model we've all bought into because we understand that's how they're going to go about doing things.
Right.
Fine. This year you're in it. And Lowrie's an all-star. He's an important part of what this team has cooking. How can you possibly move him at the deadline? Because this is the final year of his contract. If there's a contender out there and the Dodgers are looking for middle infield help, they've been linked to Machado, and I know Lowry's no Machado, but if you have to settle, maybe you settle for a guy like Lowrie. And remember, the A's did do business with the Dodgers just a few years ago. How can you sell that guy off at the deadline and still convince the fan base you're going for it? That would be the ultimate faux pas. You can sell when you're out. How can you sell when you're in? Do you think they're considering that, or do you think he's on the move regardless because they know if they hold on to him, they're not going to be able to get anything for him at the end of the season?
I think they have to consider keeping him even though they will get nothing. But it's a tough one because he's a 34-year-old player. So he's an ideal candidate for a pre-deadline deal for a team that needs help for the remainder of the season. And Jed's going to go out and get one last good contract somewhere, but he's a very valuable piece. The problem with trading him, in my opinion, is the spotlight then goes to Franklin Barreto, and he's the second baseman who comes up and has to replace him, and that can be very challenging for a young player to step in a situation where you trade an all-star. So I think that they're going to hold on to him. As long as they stay in this proximity of Seattle, 5 behind, 6 behind, and still trending in the right direction, I think they'll keep him and make a push because they've sent the message to their fans that they're going to start doing things differently now in this new regime.
How do you trade a guy and still look good, for, and the organization still comes out smelling like a rose? You do it if you can get a guy that has a contract. So you look at Lowry, going to be 34. You look at it, you say, okay, the guy maybe have 2-3 years left. But are you saying you can sell it to the fans? Hey, the guy's getting older. We didn't want to necessarily commit to a long-term deal with the guy, even though we know he's an all-star. There are so many guys out there that got snubbed, don't have the names in front of me that you say got snubbed that could be an all-star that maybe have—
Blake Snell. That was the ultimate snub, the starter from Tampa Bay.
Excuse me, that could have—
the rare moment where you keep the mic on to cough into it.
No, I actually turned it off.
And then, it was a half.
It was
half.
A combo, but there's no flag. We play on. We're on to Cincinnati.
Oh, my God.
Good effort. It was a great
it's
effort.
It's got to be addressed. Were you kidding me?
No, it
great
has
effort.
To.
It's a button. You just reach over and push a button. It's
oh
not a sneeze.
God,
you can feel the cough, the cough coming.
You saw my light go off. Dude. Thanks, Dibs, for finally coming to my back.
Finally? That's—
it's a flag.
There's no halfway offside.
It wasn't halfway.
The cough got through.
Did it?
Probably text line 95795. Did you hear him cough into the microphone?
9559. It could have been your mic stay, you know, was on, and maybe they—
or you just coughed all the way up over into my microphone.
That's possible.
The over cough.
Yeah. The over cough.
Yeah, the Steph Curry 3-point cough.
Oh, my goodness.
Where were we?
Thank you. Thank you. So when you think about this trade, so you go out there and you say, okay, if I can get Lowry, a team that really wants him, that are considering, because Lowry wants to go to a place where— if he is going to be traded, where he's going to get a long-term deal, and there's some teams out there will do that. But then you look at a team that's saying, okay, they got a guy that they want to get off their books, and maybe it's a three, it's a younger individual that maybe has already a contract for 2-3 more years and that the A's will have control over. So that may, if you can get a swap like that, that doesn't go over as bad with the fan base if it's a comparable player that already has a contract that the A's feel that they can stomach it moving forward.
You cannot trade good players when you are in a playoff hunt. I think that's just rule number one. You do not trade good players when you are contending for the playoffs. If you do, the message you send is one that's mixed, and that's what causes problems with the fan base. Make things easy for the fans, right? The Giants do a very good job of this. They tell you every year they're going for it. They spend a ton of money to indicate they're going for it. And if they do anything at the deadline, it's to set themselves up, wait for it, to go for it. You see what I'm saying? There's never going to be a message they send where they're selling or they're out of it. Now, they may be out of it, and quietly they may move a couple pieces to jockey for a selling position, but they're not going to advertise it. You do not take an all-star. You do not take a high-profile, highly productive player and move him at the deadline when you are having your best season in years, when you are right in the thick of it, and when you've won 17 of 22. The message there is very simple. Same old A's. And all this organization is trying to do is convince you it's not the same old A's. It's a new era. We're doing things differently. That's why you cannot move on from Jed Lowry. You cannot. Even if he goes into a slump, even if you get a great offer, you stick. Otherwise, all the marketing and all the talk is exactly that. It's a whole bunch of talk. Remember, just a few years ago, you were cooking with Crisco and you moved Cespedes. And what happened there? Now, a lot of people know the metrics pointed to a regression coming in the second half anyway. There are two different ways to argue that second half collapse. But you messed with a hot lineup at an inopportune moment, and you ended up paying for it. Whatever you want to use as the reason for that is fine, but would you really want to circle back and do that to this clubhouse? When everything appears to be going so well, would you really want to make a move like that? Everyone was pushing for Jed to get into the All-Star game. It was such a snub, according to guys like Townsend. And then you move him? You can't do it.
Yeah.
You literally cannot
do that.
But
the downside of keeping him is you keep him and then you don't make the playoffs, because realistically, you have about a 10% chance of getting over Seattle and making it into the wild card. Maybe it's higher than that. We'd have to go to the absolute analytics to see what their chance is, but it's not a great one. So you keep him, you go past the deadline, and then eventually you kind of regress to your run differential, which indicates you're about an 86-win team, which won't be enough to make it in the playoffs. So you miss out, and now Jed Lowry goes elsewhere in free agency because he's going to get a raise from his $7.5 million salary. So then you end up getting nothing for Jed Lowry. I guess that, Joe, to me, is the scary downside of all this.
That's the risk. If you get nothing for him, so be it. You've been getting guys for players for years. What's it led to? An opportunity this year to compete. You're six back from the Mariners. You're six back. How do you sell a fan base on a new era if you continue to do the same old business practices? How?
I think it's tough. You're absolutely right, Joe, but I just still believe that if you can get a player that's comparable out there that doesn't have an expiring contract, that a contract that still has maybe 2-3 years left on it, and you understand the market, where the market, because you got guys, you know, this Billy Bean ball, they understand what Lowry's going to get out there in the market. They have an idea. So if you can get something, a player that's comparable, if you know, that probably got snubbed or something, and he already has a contract that you can handle, I think that you can, it's still sellable in some sense.
All right. We got to deal with some nonsense. Are you ready? You ready to deal with some nonsense?
We do nonsense better than anyone. So, yeah, bring it on.
It is drive time, and nonsense is our wheelhouse.
Let's go.
All right. So, Houston Rockets head coach Mike D'Antoni had this to say yesterday.
What was your reaction when you see them bringing in Cousins?
He, great player, great individual talent. We got all that, and not taking anything away from him. And there's two ways it could go. Either it fits or it doesn't fit. Obviously, in the Houston world, it doesn't fit.
Right.
But we don't know that. We'll see how it plays out. I do know that he's going to have to guard James Harden. I do know that. We'll see how that works out. And just, you know, things like that. And that's what we concentrate on, the positives. And
sure.
Hey, kudos to Golden State. They did a great job of signing him. And like I said, DeMarcus is one of the better players as an all-star in the league. We just hope that, you know, maybe too many all-stars on one team doesn't work. I don't know. So far, it seems to work for them.
That's Rockets head coach Mike D'Antoni on Sirius XM Radio when asked about the Boogie Cousins edition in Golden State. Mike, don't worry about the Boogie Cousins edition. He's going to have to guard James Harden. When? Game 7, when Harden is contributing to an 0-for-27 streak from deep? Listen to that part again.
I do know that he's going to have to guard James Harden. I do know that. We'll see.
Watch out. Whoa. The Warriors' Achilles heel happens to be Boogie Cousins' Achilles tendon trying to cover James Harden. First of all, has anyone had a worse offseason than the Rockets? This follows the maxim from Mike Tyson that so many people have repeated over the years. Everybody has a plan until they get punched in the mouth. Houston had a great plan right up until Game 6 of the Western Conference Finals. And then they got punched in the mouth. And then in Game 7, they got punched in the mouth again. And since then, they overpaid Chris Paul. They lost Trevor Ariza. They're trying to bring back Clint Capella. They lost Luke Mbah-Amute. And now they're rumored to be interested in Carmelo Anthony. And yet D'Antoni's convinced that Boogie Cousins could have a problem guarding James Harden. Okay.
Who's Carmelo going to guard would be the follow-up if Carmelo becomes a Rocket, because defensively he's done. Well, they're not thinking that they absolutely needed to spend every penny on Ariza. And when you give Chris Paul that kind of money, ultimately you don't have the same amount of pie to pass around to the other pieces. And so you see Ariza and you think he's replaceable somehow. Mbah-Amute with the shoulder injury was limited in the postseason. He would have been more impactful, I think, in that series. But I think what you said last week, Joe, is spot on, that you see how close you were with Chris Paul. You use the recency bias of just how great he was, and you think Harden and Paul, we have the best backcourt in the league, and that's enough to compete with the Warrior team, even if they add Boogie Cousins.
Who's James Harden going to guard? That's what he should have been saying. Okay, counter to that is, who is James Harden? Who is he going to cover? I mean, so he's going to have a hard time covering anyone on the Warriors as well. I think when you look at what the Rockets have done this offseason, it's not very good. Understand Chris Paul, what he brings to the table. Yeah, he's an older guy getting injury, and they did overpay for him. They're not going to be the 1 seed. They're not going to be the 2 seed. They'll be lucky to be the 4 or 5 seed. I don't see them even being the top 3 seeds.
This is an interesting conversation. You want to touch on this for a minute?
No question.
Who would be the top 3? Who would be the 3 teams that would finish better than them?
Well, you know that the Dubs going to be 1. And you look at number 2, you think you look at Utah, what they can possibly do. And then, come on, you got to give the edge. You got to say what this guy has shown.
Don't
you.
Don't do it.
LeBron James.
I didn't have to.
I know. He did just jump in there for you.
Yeah. So
I got your back. I knew right where you were going.
LeBron James.
It's just a question of when you went to him.
Let me tell you something.
Tell me something.
Kuzma, who do you think can guard him on the Rockets? When you think about when you look at this team, if LeBron has, if he can do what we know that he's capable of doing, JaVale McGee is very capable. JaVale McGee, he looked at this situation here at the Dubs. Everyone's like, oh, he got the minimum. Yeah. JaVale McGee understood. He started some games. They put him back on the shelf. It's a by committee, the rotation. They probably would have brought him back later on. JaVale said, no, I'm not going to deal with this anymore. I've showed you guys I can play. I've gotten better here. I played the good soldier. Everyone calls me silly, clown boy. He's viewed in a way that everyone views JaVale McGee a certain way. He laughs it off. He plays with it like, okay, he's a silly idiot and all those different things that people say. He's not comparable. All those different things. His ceiling was reached here. He understood that. His agent understood that. And he's a great guy. But he's been the laughing butt of the jokes. And it was, and his agent, Luke Walton, did a great job. And his agent said, look, son, yeah, you're going to start 15, 20 games here. You're going to play in the playoffs and you'll make big plays. But you know what, JaVale? You'll never get the just dude. You have an opportunity this year to go with Luke. And Luke probably told him this. Let's go play and let's see what happens. JaVale McGee is betting on himself. He said, I'm going to go in a situation now where I'm coming in as a leader. I'm coming in as a person that people respect right now. Didn't necessarily, they love him. He's a friendly guy. They love it, the energy. They laugh at JaVale, but
Pierre's two times.
Yeah. I mean, think about it. He's a circus act. That's what, how they view. He got to a point and said, no more.
That's what it is?
No,
that's
question.
A very interesting theory.
That's no question.
Because when he signed for the absolute minimum, which was like $2.2 million,
yeah.
You're thinking to yourself, well, wait a minute. The Warriors probably could have used that, right? But maybe it was time to move on. We just kind of moved past it. You think for him, even if the option was there, he would have taken a new challenge, so perhaps he could have had a larger role.
Absolutely. And I'm telling you right now, he will have a larger role with the Lakers. And you looked at this situation. Come on. Zaza shouldn't be in the league. He's there for leadership. Come on. Zaza can't. I mean, what I'll do is he's a good guy. He's better years of behind. He can't play. And JaVale McGee was better. So you're looking at the situation. He's like, I'm always going to be viewed a certain way. This is the box they have me here as a Warrior, which I played it. I did it well. But I feel that I've outgrown that box. And that's why he left.
He's going to be in the same box in L.A. He's not going to play anymore, I don't think.
Okay.
He's not going to do anything different. And I think it was the organization saying to all their centers, the three older centers, they all knew that the club was going in a different direction. Zaza wouldn't be back as soon as he became ineffective and really a non-participant in the playoffs. You knew David West was going to retire. And JaVale McGee is very limited from an offensive standpoint and what he can do. And if it wasn't for his fit with this team, he wouldn't have been brought back last year. You look at Looney and Bell, those are going to be your centers of the future. So the writing was on the wall for JaVale.
In 2 years with the Warriors, he averaged about 9.5 minutes per game. You got to figure he gets more than that in L.A., don't you?
Well,
again,
it's
a veteran minimum deal, so it's not like they can give him 30 minutes a game. But
we can make that bet.
You're saying he'll go over 9.5 a game?
Absolutely.
I think that's right.
I think you're right.
9.5, but I don't think he's going to get 20 minutes a game. I think he's less than 20, if that's a fair number to set it at.
I'm just saying he's going to play a lot more. He's going to have a way bigger role, no question. He's going to play between 15 to 20 minutes a game, no question. He's not going to be DNP. This is not going to be a guy. So we're talking about, it's not even close, the role that he's going to play there. Not even close.
I still don't think, despite all your great analysis, and I do believe it's been great analysis, I don't think the Lakers are going to finish better than the Rockets next year. I still think the Rockets have enough to fall, like we said about the Warriors, butt cheeks backwards in the 48-50 wins, no problem. And if they keep their nose to the pedal and avoid major injuries, I think they're going to be right in it. I don't know if they'd be the 2 seed or the 1 seed. I think they're still going to be top 3. I'm not sure who gets past them. Utah, I think, is a great case. I don't think the Lakers are ready. I think the Lakers are going to be the most overvalued team in the NBA next year.
You lost some good pieces.
You lost some very good pieces.
And now you look at Harden, what he brings. Harden's a shooter. He's just going to be a guy that's going to, and you had at least guys that could play better defense. You lost maybe a big man, too. You looking at this team, I don't think they got better.
They definitely did not get better.
And I just really don't see this team being a one. I'd be willing to bet they're not going to be one or two for sure.
Would you do the Lakers one straight up? Lakers versus Rockets. Who finishes the regular season with more wins? I'll do that one. If not, you can let it marinate.
Let me think about that one.
Why don't you go back in your corner?
Yeah.
Why don't you
okay.
just back up?
I mean, nobody. Come on.
Why don't, you, why don't you take a knee and ask for an 8 count?
LeBron James.
I can't believe you're turning your back on your guy.
Oh,
like
my
that.
God.
This guy didn't even show up at his pizza joint yesterday. You see that down in L.A.?
Lower
he
LeBron.
Promised free pizza, and LeBron was going to be there, and the line went all the way around the block, and then LeBron didn't even bother to show up.
Man,
that's bad management on somebody else's part.
Oh yeah,
trash.
Why wouldn't it be his fault?
Okay. Do you think LeBron would do that to his Laker fans? Come on,
he tweeted it.
Joe, do you really think that LeBron James would go to a city and say that he's going to be there and show up and not come on? Something either happened or his PR guy. I think that that's fake news. That's fake news.
So it's basically him tweeting that he's going to do this and then he didn't show up. So not so much fake news unless he was hacked and there's no claim of a hack. And by the way, he was out with the Kardashians recently as well.
That's great.
And Tristan Thompson. So good luck, LA. He's already fitting in perfectly.
I think that's the only
way. I saw him on TMZ yesterday.
Yeah, it's the only way he can see Tristan because they have him on basically Kardashian house arrest, from what I'm being told. He's under lock and key.
Who's more popular in that city? In the city of Los Angeles, if there was a vote, every member of Los Angeles had the vote, who's more popular? Would it be Kim Kardashian or would it be LeBron James?
I think it's without a doubt Kim Kardashian. She's got more crossover appeal than LeBron James. There's probably 500,000 females who don't know who LeBron James is down there.
Everyone knows who LeBron James is. Everyone.
Of course.
So it's not easy. You flip a coin because LeBron is global.
Yeah.
So is Kim Kardashian.
She is. But there's a lot of people that don't like LeBron, don't necessarily like Kim. I think without a doubt, when you sit there and say, oh, Kim, no.
That's a tough bet. In LA, now, if you go anywhere one thing. But in Los Angeles, to walk into her house and then say that LeBron is more popular amongst people in Los Angeles, that more people are aware and know LeBron James and know Kim Kardashian.
I'm giving her just due. I'm just saying it's LeBron James, coach. I mean,
It's Kim Kardashian.
I get it.
Do you?
Yeah, but you have to realize because you guys are male, you guys looking at it, it's Kim. No. You look at L.A., you look at – it's still a sports city. I understand the stars and all those different things.
Is it more a sports city or a movie/TV city?
What the hell is Kim? She's not a movie star.
She's nothing, but she's extraordinarily popular.
If you go to the numbers, and I hate to bring numbers into it, but let's go to the numbers. Twitter followers
tale
alone –
tale of the tape.
The tale of the tape. LeBron James with 41.9 million Twitter followers,
damn,
which is impressive. But Kim Kardashian West, shout out Kanye for putting a ring on it, 60.2 million. So
yeah,
she's got...
What is that? That's fine.
That just shows you...
It's one metric.
It is one metric.
It's one metric.
It's a metric.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry if the numbers scare you and intimidate you.
No, because most of the people that watch LeBron probably aren't on Twitter. Like, the watch with... Come on, let's talk
excellent
about...
Point.
You
know, talk about excellent on, I, point there. That's a great counter.
That's a great point, Lo.
He's coming out of the corner.
Yeah, you went to the body. I'm going to the head. Ah! Chop that, Dibby.
Speaking of which, Andre Ward will join the program Friday at 9:30.
Oh,
we bring our boy back on. He's got a lot to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely.
Danny Stuntman Wheeler apparently making an appearance in the Creed sequel, which will be coming out at Thanksgiving.
Ask Ward, how's your boy BBQ? Ask Ward, Andre, how's Lo on the grill?
That's first all? Question, yeah. First question out. One of the greatest fighters of all time. First question, how is Lo on the grill?
You don't have to ask him.
I'm looking at you right now.
You
how are you on
you
the grill? Let's just get it out of the way.
Wait. You don't have to ask him. He'll just tell you. That's how good I am.
We'll get to the
I'm
movie stuff
master.
First. We're going to get to the
you
good stuff.
You can, but he don't want to talk about
if
my BBQ.
If you're so good at grilling, then your sandwich should definitely involve some
what
sort of grilled meat. What I'm doing, it's called a transition, Lo, because we've got callers and we want to get this back around. So I tried to segue. I tried to show an ounce of professionalism. Okay?
For once. Oh, how noble.
For a change. Hey, is Andre coming
so
in studio or is he going to be on the phone?
He's going to be on the phone.
Okay.
He's very busy.
Love
He's
that
got
guy.
A million things going on right now. The contender's coming back. He's involved in that. We'll talk about all that Friday at 9:30. Now, speaking of sandwiches, we need to bring the people into the conversation. Damon Bruce has a sandwich at Ike's.
He sure does.
It's a phenomenal sandwich. Ike reached out on Twitter yesterday to Lorenzo Neal. He let him know that they were going to be opening an Ike's location in Fresno.
Fresno.
And he wants to name a sandwich after Lo. We need your help. We need a name for the sandwich, and we need ideas for what the sandwich should be comprised of. Now, the Lorenzo Neal is a terrific name for a sandwich, and maybe that's ultimately what Lo and Ike settle on. Maybe it's not, but we're willing to take ideas. And if we use your idea for either the name of the sandwich or for what's in the sandwich, we're going to get an autographed Fresno State helmet, autographed by Dan Dibley.
Oh, yeah.
And we're going to give it out to that individual. So you are competing for something here. We want your creativity. The numbers, 888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. Ooh, by the way, Instagram. Kim Kardashian, 114 million followers on Instagram. LeBron, 40 million followers
Boom.
On Instagram.
Yeah, don't let those metrics get in the way of an otherwise good case. Yeah. As
and
we go to the body
strong
again.
Sports talk radio as we move from Kim Kardashian into sandwich talk.
I think her sandwich.
Happy July, everybody.
Her sandwich would just simply be a hot dog, I would imagine.
Her sandwich, her milkshake brings all the boys
Give yourself the small applause for that one. But still, worthy of a chuckle.
Appreciate it.
The hot dog. How about a hot dog?
No bun.
Whoa.
Whoa. Yeah. Maybe.
I think hers needs
boy,
a bigger
cold. Boy, got cold.
Get Anna jumping in with
it
bigger
got cold
bun.
In here.
Yeah,
Ted Bundy over there.
Jeez.
Oh my God! Yesterday it's Gronk's girl, and today it's this. Okay,
interesting.
All in the name of show research, Coach. As my googling takes on a feverish pitch over here. Google.
And googling seems limited to one specific topic. Tell us a little bit about it. If you were to come up with a sandwich idea, give the people an idea of who you are. I'd imagine this is what Ike would talk to you about. Lo, tell me what you like. Tell me your dislikes. Let's work together to build a terrific sandwich.
Joe, without a doubt, I'm going to go with wheat bread. I'm going to have it toasted. And I'm going to have some pepper jack cheese on it.
Will people have the option of the toasted bread?
They would. You wouldn't have it soft, you know, but toasted. Because I enjoy my cheese kind of with that melted kind of the warmness of it with the cold cuts. Definitely the cold cuts. It's going to be turkey. Got to have a little bit of turkey. And I'm thinking about that pork. Turkey and ham. Turkey and ham. It's hard to go wrong with turkey and ham. Definitely spice it up with a little bit of avocado. Absolutely. Let's go with some black olives, too. A little salt and pepper, all in vinegar. You got to do that. That just brings out those accents, those flavors that, you know, you have that combustion going on in your mouth. And it's just going to taste so good when it touches your lips. Definitely throw a little bit of mayo on there, a little mayo.
Mayo with oil and vinegar.
Joe. Think about mayo. Mayo has a little oil in it. That's what keeps it. That's why it comes out like that. It has a little oil. Didn't know if you knew that. So you definitely got to have that. And the salt and pepper is great. So those are some of the. Those would be some of the things. I'd love to get some. You know, some other people to tell me what they like. But that's just a good hearty sandwich. And it depends. If you go with the 8-inch, when they cut it, I'd like to mix it. You know me, I'm a combo guy. So I could even put a couple other proteins on the other side.
It's a sandwich. It's not. He's not asking you to open a restaurant. He's asking you to pick
a
sandwich. There's like so much
going on. I left your sprouts out, Anna.
You know what? Just give him a hot dog. Give him a hot dog.
No,
the Lorenzo Neal hot dog.
No. Guys, you guys are going to sit there and act that way when you guys seen sandwiches that have way more. I put friggin' only 7 different items on that. That's nothing compared to what's everything.
Lo, you outlined the most popular sandwich in sandwich history. Just turkey ham on a piece of bread with some mayonnaise. So, I mean, I think that the listeners, maybe we kick it over to the people and have them maybe, spice up your sandwich a little bit.
That's fine. I'm good with it.
Yeah, I mean.
Ultimately, it is your sandwich. It is your decision.
You basically described a cold cut combo.
No, the cold cut combo is usually, you know, there's different type of cold cuts. Like bologna. I could have said bologna or salami on it.
Sure. Take some influence from Anna. Create a version of a gyro, and then you could call it the Music City Gyroquil.
What?
I actually just came up with that in the last like 40 seconds. I was trying to come up with something for Music City Miracle.
I like it.
Because that's something you're involved in. You're one of only 3 people known for making that play. The Music City Gyroquil.
Well, somebody actually suggested the Music City Meatball.
So. Yeah, not bad. I think the Gyroquil is
trying to force
better.
A square peg into a round hole.
Gyroquil, yeah.
How about the Music City Cold Cut Combo?
Not bad.
Or the Music City Hot Dog.
Or how about the Chicken Milk Melt?
Now we're really starting to get into something good here.
You could call it the K5, and then the meat would all fall at the bottom on the first bite. Don't turn your mic off. We're all family. Let's just talk. Go to hell, dude.
You open up the sandwich. You're all excited.
Okay,
you pick it up in the whole thing.
All right. Don't make me go to L.A. and join JaVale McGee.
First bite, everything is down.
Yeah, yeah. Mom, we got to be able to have some fun with this. It's jealousy.
I was sitting on that all morning.
You get a sandwich named after you. You get to make a pick.
I saved that one for drive time, Coach.
Just turn it over to the people. 888-957-9570.
Should
the sandwich fall apart before you're able to get a bite? A lot of calls from Santa Rosa today, man.
That's wrong, dude.
Art in Santa Rosa. Art, what are you thinking for the sandwich? The name or what should be in the sandwich?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Hey, I'm glad you said wheat bread because I always order this sandwich on wheat bread, and I think it tastes great on wheat.
My man.
But first I want to tell you the name, the LNVF, Lorenzo Neal Victory Formation.
Okay. And I like that name. It's nice.
Yeah, in the victory, you got your quarterback and your two running backs, so you got to have your regular stuff on your bread, your cheese, your tomato, lettuce, onions. But then you're running back, you want a big slob of roast beef smothered in barbecue sauce. Your quarterback's going to be your cheese, your pepper jack cheese. I love pepper jack on this.
So does don't you, Lowe?
Yeah, I keep going.
Lowe also likes pepper jack, so that's a pretty good call.
You're doing all right now.
Yeah. Now, your other running back, it's going to be tuna. With jalapenos on top of that.
All right, that's enough of this. We're looking for a sandwich, not a lifestyle. Tuna and roast beef
and barbecue?
Oh, my God.
That's a disaster. That's a mud butt waiting to happen.
You call it the mud butt.
Yeah.
That's the one sandwich I know I'm not getting.
Right.
It's like tuna Larry David sandwich. White fish and capers.
Right. Tuna fish and roast beef and barbecue sauce.
That suggestion started strong. It's like, I like wheat bread and I like this.
Pepper
and it's like
jack,
the name's
yeah.
pretty good. A lot of these suggestions. And then progressively more and more things got added on there to the point where it's like, all right, we're just going to hang up. Right.
The name was perfect, though, because you'd have to take a knee in victory formation after you ate it. So
yeah.
Well, once he really brought it home.
Well, once he mentioned tuna fish, I saw you think about your old ex-girlfriend, Dib. So, yeah, you started to smile.
Oh, God. Sean in Pleasant Hill. Sean, thank you for the phone call. What are you thinking?
All right, gentlemen, good morning. I've got a little quick history for you. Before Lowe came on full-time with y'all, he was on the Rise Guys, and he did a bit called Lowe on Love, and I think that's your next Ike sandwich. Ike is all about love, and you've got to have that love in there, so why not Lowe on Love? And besides, let's bring back the bit again to the morning show. What do you say?
Okay,
you keep going right
going
now.
On
you,
here.
You don't stop. Come on, give us a little bit more. Come on, talk to us.
Now, I don't think he has ingredients.
So Ike's is a community sandwich kind of play, so they're big on love. And I know they'd be big with a little bit of Lowe on Love.
So, there's a nice suggestion for a name/theme there. What would the Lowe on Love entail? Would it still be all the ingredients you're talking about, or do you have to go in a different direction? Ham and turkey.
Yeah.
Does that symbolize love, or does something out there symbolize love better in sandwich form?
Ooh, Joe, that's very tough, because if you're going by love, it's got to be something sweet. So I'm trying to think of some type of sweet sauce that I could put on that sandwich if it's going to be Lowe on Love. You know, I don't know what's out there that's really, really sweet. That just, maybe we can make it a honey love sandwich. Throw a little bit of honey. Because think about that glazed ham. You always have a little honey or that brown syrup on there, brown sugar on that ham. So you can make it a honey roasted sandwich with that love. So yeah, then if it's going to be love, then ham still would be on, because ham can be sweet.
So ham with honey drizzled on it.
A little bit of ham. A little bit of honey. It'll be sweet.
Maybe a little of that honey mustard.
And then, of course, mayo, oil and vinegar, and tuna.
And you got to have that salt and pepper.
Just to, complete the package.
The tuna.
Guys, I was thinking salt and pepper. What's everyone think about that? I don't know.
The tuna just... You can't do tuna and roast beef.
Marcellus Wiley is going to join us in like 2 minutes.
Thank
I can't
God.
Wait to get his thoughts on this. Lou in Pittsburgh. Lou, what are you thinking?
What's happening, everyone? All right. Check it out, Lowe. This is for you. I know you love the meat. So let's start off with a nice soft roll, all right? Quarter-inch piece of ribeye steak, 2 slabs of some smoked turkey, some brown sugar bacon with some jalapeno. Make it a meal. You know you want your lettuce and tomato, not a problem. Throw in some curly fries and end it with some chicken milk.
It's great uptick. Pittsburgh's on the board in the Bay Star rankings with a solid suggestion.
Is anyone going to offer up anything that isn't a heart attack in waiting?
No.
This guy's like ribs, bacon, and then more ribs. And then salt and pepper.
I had somebody say the pig farm basically put all forms of pig, pulled pork, ham, bacon, just all of it.
The pig farmer. That's not bad. Mm-hmm. It's not bad.
That's why I go with ham and turkey. I mean, I know it's I'm a simple guy, but then you just add, you know, you throw the lettuce, tomato, crush some olives, the black olives.
There's got to be a way you can put a slight unique twist on it. If you go with an old staple, you have to have your twist to it. If it comes with a side of soup, that would play into you quite well, I think. Or you end up coming up with the name. But if you go with the Lorenzo Neal and it's a classic staple sandwich, I think you're doing yourself an injustice. You are a unique individual. There has to be at least a little signature in there. Maybe it's just the one ingredient. Maybe it's the salt with no pepper or the pepper.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.